Coming up later on will be Rafa, but I'm delighted to say that we are joined by our guest for today. He's a man who is a top-class English football writer and a wonderful friend of the show as well, always able to help us out and come on to give us his thoughts and expert opinions on the Premier League, and we'll touch on a bit of Champions League as well with him, I'm sure. Delighted to say, on the line, ready and waiting for us right now, is the Independent's very own Mr. Steve Tung. Steve, an absolute pleasure to have you back on the show again. How are you, mate? How was the weekend?
Very good. I saw a game that was over after about 22 minutes at Craven Cottage between Fulham and Manchester United. And we were fearing a humiliation, really. But Fulham, fortunately, and probably fortunately for their manager, who is under a bit of pressure, as you know, Fulham made a fight of it in the second half. Well, a game of it, anyway. And although it helped push United back up the table, it wasn't quite the embarrassment that that Fulham really might have feared. But you know, that was an interesting afternoon. Sunday, as you'll have gathered, a little bit disappointing with one goal in the two games, although that one was a very important one and a hugely well-received one for Cardiff City, of course.
I was going to say, let's start with that Cardiff-Swansea game, because when I mentioned it to Rafa on Friday, he almost seemed to laugh at it like it wasn't an important game. But for these two sides, first top-flight derby in over 100 years between these two, this was a huge scalp in terms of bragging rights in South Wales, isn't it?
Yes, they really don't like each other. It might have been a bit of an exaggeration on behalf of the television companies over here to call it, I think, one of the biggest games in world football. But what they meant by that was talking about just the intensity of it and how much dislike there is between the fans for all sorts of reasons, historical reasons, cultural reasons, Cardiff being the capital of Wales and Swansea feeling that they're very much the little brothers who don't get the respect and attention they deserve. Swansea, of course, having got up into the Premier League ahead of Cardiff, but now a real rivalry. To be honest, I wasn't expecting much of a game in terms of actual football, even though it was Swansea, and Swansea played the better football for some time, but they couldn't really cope in the second half when Cardiff, almost as a deliberate policy, seemed to sit back a little bit in the first half, which interestingly is a policy that several teams seem to have been adopting. I see Newcastle was saying almost the same thing about their home game with Chelsea. You just get to half time really and contain, and then the second half you really push on, and that worked very well for those two home teams, Cardiff and Newcastle.
It was a big win for Cardiff and a great game of football before that as well on Sunday, I personally thought anyway. One I thoroughly enjoyed, Everton against Tottenham. No goals, but plenty to talk about, especially in terms of Hugo Lloris and whether he should have been taken off the pitch or not after being knocked out by Lukaku. What did you make of that situation? It was very peculiar indeed.
Yes, it was. And Tottenham and Villas-Boas, the manager, are getting a lot of criticism at home today. It's become a bit of an issue, partly, I think, because of rugby union, where the way the game is played, there is a lot of more head injuries, or at least concussion, and it's very much the rule that you just don't play on once you've been concussed. And you're not even supposed to play for several days, if not a week afterwards. So there was widespread surprise, and there's been some quite strong criticism. Other people are saying, well, it was the doctor's decision, but Villas-Boas, to be fair to him, has said, well, he took the responsibility for it. And you could see just from the pictures just how determined Lloris was to play on. So he put his own manager in quite a difficult position. I mean, they were at one stage almost literally trying to drag him off the pitch, and it almost seemed as if he sort of broke free and ran back to the goal and wanted to get on with it. And the justification for Tottenham's decision was that he made a couple of good saves after that, and so you could say that, well, he was okay. But it was worrying to hear them say that he didn't remember anything about the incident, so he quite clearly had been actually knocked out, not concussed. And the worry is that there are then repercussions later. So I think, looking back, they might decide that it would actually have been a more sensible thing to take him off. And I wonder if we might not see some sort of regulations before too long that a player who can be, who it's clear has actually been knocked out, that a player must come off and cannot be allowed to continue.
I was going to say, do you think that is something that needs to happen? Because when you've got a player who's been been knocked out, whether or not they think they're okay, if you've got a doctor and a manager, surely an overriding executive decision needed to be made that Lloris, after being unconscious for a moment on the pitch, was, whether he thought it or not, was in no fit state to continue playing.
Yes, it was almost as if they didn't want to create a situation of even greater embarrassment, where, as I say, they had to physically manhandle him to get him off the pitch. Mm. But I would have thought, given that, you know, he was supposed to have come off for treatment anyway, that it should have come off, and that it may well be in future that we see a regulation and that is actually enforced upon the team.
What did you make of Tottenham's play going forward up the other end of the pitch, Steve? Because they seem to at points get to that final third, be camped out in Everton's half for a spell, but really lacked that incisive cutting ball and the movement off the ball as well. It was starting to get a bit static suddenly.
Well, this does happen with them, I'm afraid, and it's part of the problem of what's effectively a 4-5-1 or a 4-2-3-1, or yesterday even more of a 4-1-4-1, as if they were trying to get sort of people forward in support of Soldado, but as was obvious, he does tend to get a bit isolated. He's getting some criticism now for not having done much other than score goals from the penalty spot, but he clearly isn't getting the support, even with, you know, two wide players like Townsend and Lennon. Is quite bold to play away from home, so a bit of credit to the manager for that. But other Spurs supporters are getting very restless. The fact they've only scored 9 goals in 10 games, and the fact that Tottenham as a club are traditionally one of those who do go forward all the time and then who expect to go forward pretty much with, you know, with two strikers. It does seem a shame that they haven't been able to get Defoe and Soldado playing together. Adebayor, of course, has not appeared at all this season, appears to be training with the youth team or whatever, and is out of the picture. And the other worry, I think, always was that having signed so many players, and in particular midfield players, in the summer, it was going to take a while to integrate them together, so that although people like Paulinho look better now, they haven't quite got that blend that they want, and they clearly aren't quite providing the service that Soldado wants.
Now, Tottenham, of course, in and around that top four area at the moment. It's very close, though, in that 8th to 2nd place in the Premier League. Will Everton have been pleased to have got a point against Tottenham? Yes, at home, but to show that they can compete with this expected top 4, 5, 6 that we talked about at the beginning of the season?
Yes, I think so. They looked in the first half as if they couldn't quite compete on the same level, and Roberto Martinez had to say a few things at half-time and got them going forward much more positively and to much better effect in the second half. And so, as you say, they're hanging on, and it is extraordinary how close those teams, as you mentioned, between 2nd and 7th, down to Everton, just separated by 1 point. And that makes the more general point about how much of a muchness it is, really, below Arsenal, who are the one team who've broken away. And the other great beneficiaries of the weekend, of course, who I mentioned at the start, Manchester United, supposedly having a very bad time, but actually up to 8th, and only 3 points behind Chelsea now, who are in 2nd place. So although they've really handicapped themselves with that start, Man United, they're back on the heels very much of the top four again.
Chelsea had a little stumble, and from the competitions that we run here on World Football Daily and prediction games elsewhere, there aren't many people that had Chelsea stumbling up at Newcastle on Saturday in the early game, and Mourinho was very critical. Is it right for him to be so critical of the players that he selected for that game?
I think he gets away with that because the players who play under him do generally respect him so much. I think they're prepared to take that from him. You might say there have been one or two Chelsea managers in the past who they wouldn't have taken that from and from whom it would have been a bad tactic. But I think they'll take that from Mourinho. And he clearly was angry about a game that he felt they should have won, and a lot of other people felt they should have won. By half-time, you know, they seemed to be well in control of the game, and it was one of those games that we do see quite a few of these days, whereby one team looks so much in control. I was thinking of Arsenal at Palace last week and United at Fulham, although they got the goals this time, that you think this game's just going to be a formality, and that kind of idea can seep through to the players a little bit. So I think it was fair enough. He's been pretty supportive of the players. He's appreciated their efforts and their performances up till now. And I think, you know, Mourinho, he doesn't do these things without thinking about them. There's always a reason for saying what he says. Doesn't just come out with things off the top of his head very often. And he will have thought they wanted a G up, especially before the Champions League game, which they've now got against Schalke in midweek.
They're of course, notable that Juan Mata started that game for Chelsea. And coming out and blaming his selection, does that hinder the rift that some people are trying to big up between Mata and Mourinho, because it's almost like him saying, well, look who I picked, and there were 11 players that didn't work out there, and one of them was Juan Mata, somebody who I've made a point of not picking so far this season.
Yes, he's not helped himself. I mean, earlier on, having been left out, it seemed that had had the desired effect, and Mata came back in and played much better once or twice, and was clearly doing the things, the chasing back in particular, that Mourinho wanted. But, I mean, 4 out of 10 in the newspaper I'm looking at, which was a neutral view for Mata, he hasn't taken his chance. It was a big-ish game for Mourinho to not only to play him in, but he played him in that role that he wants, just behind the front man Torres. He had Oscar and Hazard out wide, whereas all of them really want to play in that central role, but Oscar in particular often gets it ahead of Mata. And you can hear Mourinho now saying in the future, well, look, Mata had his chance. He played in the role he wants to play in, and he just didn't perform. So it would be a great surprise if he, for one, was turning out against Schalke in midweek.
And you touched on as well the side that are starting to edge their way from everybody else in the Premier League table. Arsenal, a big 2-0 win against Liverpool at the Emirates. Were you maybe disappointed by Liverpool in that first half, Steve? Because Arsenal were very much in control of that game, but a lot of it also appeared to be a lack of energy in that Liverpool first half.
Yes, Liverpool came up short. Disappointing. I'd been to see Brendan Rodgers before the game, and all the talk then, as you can imagine, was very positive. They had produced a very good performance the previous week at home to West Bromwich Albion. All seemed to be going well. They were going down to London knowing that if they won, they would actually go top of the league. And, of course, they never looked like it. Much talk about Suarez and Sturridge, who didn't hit it off at all either. But it was perhaps more than that, because we know that they will come good again and they'll get goals again. It was perhaps the midfield that was the most worrying thing, just the way they were outpassed and bypassed, really, by Arsenal's.
Where's the problem in the heart of that midfield then? Because you've got Lucas, who was proclaimed as being one of the keys to that midfield last year. You've got Gerrard, who is obviously an absolute fan favourite at Anfield. And you've got Henderson, who there's a lot of expectation, and he seems to meet on occasion and then not quite so often. Is it one of them, or is it a collective grouping that's the problem?
Well, the other point, of course, is that even if you put those three fairly central, which they can easily do with this new newish 3-5-2 formation that Liverpool have adopted quite sensibly to get the best out of Suarez and Sturridge, you ask a lot, as you do in any 3-5-2 formation, of the wing backs, which meant on Saturday, young Flanagan and Sissoko, who were equally poor, so they weren't getting anything at all from there. The substitutes, Coutinho and Moses, came on in their place and didn't really do any better. So they weren't getting much hope. But no, as you say, in the middle, Gerrard, Lucas and Henderson were just being overrun by what, of course, is one of the very best midfields in the country, so much so that Arsenal almost have an embarrassment of riches there and have to leave one or two pretty good players out. At the moment, for instance, Jack Wilshere, who we gather has now got another ankle problem, won't be involved this week. Disappointing for Arsenal, but in a way solves a bit of a problem for Wenger, who, even with Walcott and Oxlade-Chamberlain injured, is trying to fit, you know, five or six pretty good players into that midfield.
We've got the Champions League coming up, Steve, and we've quickly got to touch on that just briefly. Manchester City against CSKA Moscow on Tuesday night. There's got to be quite an edge in the atmosphere at the Etihad after the scenes away from home in Moscow.
Yes, I guess there won't be too many visiting supporters. You get some from virtually any country in the world that plays in England these days, just from people based over here. But the Moscow clubs don't traditionally take all that many abroad. You would certainly be very surprised if there are any further crowd problems. We must at least hope they've learnt their lesson from that. And in terms of the actual football, City, having won the game, got 3 points ahead of CSKA, can put themselves in a very strong position now by winning that, even if, of course, Bayern Munich are very much the favourites to win the group.
And Arsenal have this huge game against Dortmund. How big is it and how important? Is it a must-win for Arsenal at this stage, considering they have to go away to Napoli the following week and then wrapping it all up with the game against Marseille?
You would have thought that a draw would be regarded as a good result, not just because Dortmund are so strong, as we know, and even that Napoli might be expected to beat Marseille. It's very much a three-team contest, of course. Arsenal, Dortmund and Napoli all on 6 points. So, yes, I can see what you mean, that three would be very welcome indeed. But I don't think you could say that going away to Dortmund and getting a draw, even after losing at home to them, was disastrous. So you would expect Arsenal to win that final game against Marseille, and you would hope with a draw that they might have enough.
And Steve, we look forward to seeing what will happen in the Champions League this week as Chelsea take on Schalke as well, and Manchester United, of course, take on Real Sociedad. It's been an absolute pleasure to have a chat with you today, Steve. We always enjoy getting you on the show to give us your expert view on all things English football, and we look forward to catching up with you very soon indeed, my good man.
Pleasure as always.
Cheers, Steve. Thanks very much indeed. Steve Tung joining us then, the man for all things Premier League football, joining us, writer for The Independent. And a lovely chap to have on the show as well as the Premier League title race continues. And it's so peculiar when you look at that Premier League table. It reminds me very much, and this is a little peculiar, maybe slightly odd analogy to give, but it reminds me very much of a cycling race, like the Tour de France or something. You've got this one team, Arsenal, who've started to pull away from the rest of the peloton, if you will, because 8th to 2nd.